Good afternoon. Jennifer already said I'll be presenting on work for my previous position with CDC's Division of Vector-Borne Diseases. Ying already gave a great background, so I'll kind of breeze through this first slide on what tularemia is. It's a rare and potentially fatal zoonotic disease. What I want to make clear is that it's a BT agent because of its low infectious dose and ability to infect via aerosol. In humans, it causes a wide range of clinical syndromes varying in severity. Routes of human infection with F. tularensis are many, including tick or deer fly bites, hunting and handling infected carcasses, landscaping or ingesting contaminated food and water. Depending on the infection route, humans can become ill with one of six different clinical forms of tularemia. Human infection via cat bite or scratch is well documented, as these animals are susceptible to infection with F. tularensis and may carry the bacteria in their mouths or on their claws after hunting infected mammalian carcasses, such as rabbits. However, the role of dogs in transmitting infection to humans is much less clear. Few case reports linking human infections to dogs exist in the literature. Because of its status as a BT agent and ability to cause severe illness in humans, tularemia is a nationally notifiable disease. CDC receives core NEDS variables on tularemia cases from health departments. In addition, states may voluntarily provide supplemental information on tularemia cases, including symptoms, exposures, and clinical severity, and these are shared via case report form shown here. Using this supplemental case information, our objectives were to characterize the scope and patterns of human tularemia cases with exposures linked to domestic dogs, describe canine roles of transmission of F. tularensis to humans, and identify common dog-related risk factors that could inform prevention recommendations. So to do this, we reviewed available confirmed and probable human tularemia case investigation records, supplemental to national electronic surveillance data from 2006 to 2016, and extracted those with potential evidence of domestic dog involvement, specifically history of a pet dog that was recently ill, died, or brought home dead animals, or other written comments that provided evidence of dog-related exposure to F. tularensis. Two independent reviewers then evaluated these records in more detail to select those demonstrating dog-related F. tularensis exposure based on the strength of available evidence. So out of 1,814 tularemia cases that were reported to NEDS during the study period, 735 supplemental tularemia case investigation records were available for review. 220 records had any mention of a dog indicated as a pet in response to standardized questions regarding domestic animal exposure and pet illness, or in the written comments section. 24 of the 735 records were identified as probable or possible cases of dog-related tularemia. Median age of patients with dog-related tularemia was 51 years. More than half were female. And this is in contrast to human tularemia cases reported through NEDS during the same time period. They were of lower median age, 47 years, and less frequently female, 33%. All six clinical forms of tularemia were represented, and most cases were ulceroglandular-glandular in presentation, followed by pneumonic and oropharyngeal. Among 20 patients with known clinical outcomes, 18 patients recovered and 2 died. Cases were most commonly reported from Missouri, followed by Colorado and Kansas. 1 to 2 cases each were also reported from Alaska, Arizona, Nebraska, New Mexico, Oregon, and South Dakota. Month of illness onset ranged from April through September, with most cases occurring in July, May, and June. Among the 24 cases in our series, illness was attributed to 3 main exposure types. Direct contact with dogs caused illness in half of cases. Contact with dead animals retrieved by domestic dogs caused illness in a third of cases. And the remaining were attributed to domestic dogs bringing infected ticks in contact with humans. So let's explore these three routes of infection in a little more detail. Among the cases classified as exposed through direct contact with dogs, infection conceivably occurred through dog bite or scratch in 8 cases. And I apologize to the Chihuahua lovers out there. Of which 6 were ulceroglandular in presentation. The remaining 2 cases were reported as typhoidal and oropharyngeal, the latter being associated with a bite to the neck. Close contact via face snuggling or licking after a dog's exposure to F. tularensis was suggested in the remaining 4 cases. And 3 of these patients had pneumonic tularemia, typically the most severe form, including 1 fatal case, which was associated with co-sleeping with a family dog that was known to hunt rabbits. The 4th was reported as glandular, and no other type of dog-related exposure was associated with pneumonic illness. 8 of the 24 cases were exposed through contact with rabbit or rodent carcasses brought home or retrieved by domestic dogs. And in 5 cases, dead animals were found in the home and disposed by the patient, while in 3 cases, a carcass was specifically removed from a dog's mouth. And among the 8 cases, 6 were ulceroglandular. In presentation, 3 patients were noted to be inoculated through an existing wound, such as a splinter, and 2 were oropharyngeal in presentation. And one of these cases, the oropharyngeal cases, resulted in the death in a child when illness progressed to pneumonia and meningitis, and the patient had contact with rabbit and rodent carcasses that were brought in by the family dogs. Dogs were implicated in bringing ticks in contact with humans in 4 cases, either carried on the fur or in 1 instance, inoculating the owner's eye when the tick burst while trying to remove it from the dog. As expected by exposure route, the 3 patients with reported tick bites got ulceroglandular tularemia, while the patient with accidental inoculation of tick blood in the eye developed oculoglandular tularemia. And interestingly, this seemingly rare presentation or exposure route has been reported previously in the literature. Only 4 of the 24 cases, case records, indicated exposure to ill dogs, and only 1 ill dog was evaluated for laboratory evidence for exposure. A single serum sample had a positive F. tularensis specific titer of 1 to 256. Clinical illness in dogs is thought to be mild and self-limiting, so this may explain the small number of ill dogs reported and the lack of investigation into domestic canine sources of infection. Even with mild illness or absence of clinical signs, dogs can facilitate human exposure to F. tularensis by serving as a vehicle for the bacteria or bringing infected ticks or carcasses into contact with humans. Using a One Health approach, public health officials should be alert to the potential of dogs as a source of infection for humans and encourage veterinary evaluation of dogs linked to human cases. And veterinarians, of course, play a key role in ensuring that pet owners are aware of risks and opportunities for disease prevention. There were several limitations. Tularemia surveillance practices vary from state to state, and supplemental information was only provided for a proportion of the total cases reported in the U.S. The small size of this case series limits generalizability. Mild infections may go undiagnosed and therefore unreported to the public health system. Furthermore, case selection relied on the strength of available evidence, and some case records were excluded because they lacked sufficient evidence to support dog-related exposure. These dog-related tularemia infections highlight specific modifiable risk factors for pet owners to minimize their chances of exposure to F. tularensis. Pet owners should take precautions when disposing of animal carcasses retrieved by pet dogs, be encouraged to use veterinarian-recommended tick-control products on dogs, exercise caution in direct facial contact with dogs, especially those who hunt or roam, and seek veterinary care for ill pets. So I'd like to thank state and local health departments who have investigated and collected information on tularemia cases over the years, and colleagues at CDC Division of Vector-Borne Diseases. Thank you.